to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service. Catch all the hard-hitting news and current affairs that focuses on all relevant First Nations issues from a First Nations standpoint.
This is Karina Hogan with Let's Talk.
Good morning and welcome to Let's Talk. Before we begin, I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which you are taking this broadcast from and acknowledge the traditional owners of the land on which I am bringing this broadcast to you. I'd also like to acknowledge elders past and present and also acknowledge those elders of more recent arrivals. You can catch Let's Talk on 98.9 from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. in the morning, Monday to Fridays, or you can catch a repeat at 7 p.m. at night. You can also upload this program a little bit later on in the day once it's uploaded at 98.9fm.com.au. Jump onto our Facebook page and also our Twitter page and get involved in conversations. So this month being November, we've been celebrating November here at 98.9 FM, Brisbane Indigenous Media Association. You can jump onto Movember, the Movember website, and check out Team Beamer. You can donate to us. Please donate. We are, past the halfway mark of November, and it's such an important cause. Movember is dedicated to bringing awareness to prostate cancer and testicular cancer, but also mental health and suicide for men. I think this is an incredibly important topic and something that is close to my heart. I know so many people have been impacted by suicide, especially black fellas. Sadly, it is we are well and truly overrepresented in suicide rates. And that's something that I'd like to see change. And my guest today is someone that's been actively involved in advocating for improving mental health of men, but women also. He's, done amazing things in this space. I'm excited to welcome Joe Williams to the program. Good morning, Joe.
Morning. How you doing? How's things?
Yeah, good. Up here in Brizzy.
What's the weather like that way?
Oh, it's actually a bit drizzly and rainy today, Joe. What about down there?
Mate, we got, it's overcast.
Gadigal country, right?
At the moment. No, I'm out in the bush.
You're out in the bush?
I'm out in the bush, mate. I'm living at the moment in Dubbo, Wiradjuri country.
Lovely.
But a Wiradjuri Wolgalu man initially, but my partner's a Dubbo girl, so
yeah, right.
She's the boss, mate. She's the boss, and I do what she says, and
yes.
I do what she says to you.
That's a great answer there, Joe. So I was going to start by getting you to tell us who your mob is and where you're from.
I'm a Wiradjuri Wolgalu man, born in Cowra, in western New South Wales, about 3.5 hours over the Blue Mountains, heading west, southwest. But then my family's got ties, my mother's side to Orange, the community Orange, mm-hmm. and my dad's side, Brungle, which is our Wolgalu country over that way.
Solid.
Which is the around the Snowy Mountains sort of area, so cold country. But I grew up in Wagga. So all sort of around Wiradjuri country, no matter where I've been, what I've done as far as sport goes and, lucky to travel across the world and so forth, but always find myself back home in the beautiful dirt of Wiradjuri country.
Deadly. And I want to learn a little bit more about you growing up and, of course, about your rugby league career. For those that are listening that don't know, Joe Williams is an Indigenous sportsman who played rugby league and boxed professionally between 2004 and 2008. And you've actually had a lot to do with bringing attention to mental health. And I do want to let people know, if they are listening, that if this does trigger something for you and you do feel like you, need to talk to someone, I do recommend calling 131114, which is Lifeline. And you can also reach out to your local Aboriginal Medical Service. I always encourage that. That's something that's helped me when I've struggled with things like anxiety, PTSD, depression and that type of stuff. And I think that it's just incredibly important for people to have it in the front of their minds to take check of their mental health. So please, if you are struggling with your mental health, call 131114. That's Lifeline. Or even if you haven't had a check-in on your mental health, go see your GP or check in with a mate. I think these things are incredibly important. Joe, I want to start by getting you to tell me a little bit about your experience, because you've actually written a book called The Enemy Within, which was released a couple of years ago. But it was very much centred on your experience as a Wiradjuri First Nations man who lived with mental illness, including bipolar disorder, and you experienced suicidal ideation as well. And so from that, you wrote this book, The Enemy Within. So tell me a little bit about your journey with the book, for starters, and what you were trying to achieve with that.
I guess how we got to the point of the book, I was doing a lot of work in the US, and I was working with a brilliant guy called Kevin Hines. And Kevin attempted his life by jumping from the Golden Gate Bridge, which a very, very small percentage of people are lucky enough to survive that, and far too many people lose their life to that. And everywhere that I went with Kevin, and Kevin's this, you know, world-renowned speaker and an amazing, amazing gift of telling story. Everywhere that we went, people were lined up for him to get his book and to sign his book. And whilst I was speaking before Kevin a lot of the times, and I've been lucky enough to speak in 35 different states around the US, everyone said, "Joe, where's your book?" You know, as a First Nation man, as a former sports person, there are people that would connect with your story as well. And I guess it relates back to that negative narrative that I've had for a hell of a long time, that, you know, that speaks to me every day, you know, the inner talk that we all have, except that mine was extremely critical and extremely negative, and has been for a long time. And, you know, we can get into that after, but everyone who said, "Joe, you've got a compelling story to tell as well. I think you should write a book." And it literally planted a seed from there, and I went from writing long statuses on Facebook to writing some blogs, and then, you know, to the point of the idea of a book proposal. And thankfully, a publisher came to me and said, "Joe, you know, we think this is something that would go well." And, you know, it was published a couple of years ago now, and, you know, it's been lucky enough to be published in the US and Canada and you know, sold. I've had contact from many different countries around the world, and it's not the fact that they're First Nation people or even the fact that they play rugby league or sport. It's just the collective story of people's struggle, you know, and I talk about, and it's, the book is Defying the Enemy Within. So we all have this little dialogue that speaks to us every day. For some people it's worse than others, and for me it was on the back of some fairly heavy head trauma, some concussions in playing footy at a young age, and we know the research and the that's well documented now around head trauma and concussions and the impacts that has. On the back of my first concussion, started a dialogue inside my head that talked to me like somebody was in there and told me that I was worthless, that I was no good, and it progressively got worse to the point that it continuously tells me that I'm not good enough and don't belong here anymore.
Yeah.
Many years from that 13-year-old kid, I still go through those same things. It's just that over many years, I've also built some fantastic coping strategies to be able to manage it. And, you know, a lot of those management strategies I talk about in the book, which, you know, whilst it's great that I played footy and, you know, with sport and all that sort of stuff, it's the coping strategies and connecting to those that everyone can do. And that's what I think I'm most proud of about the book, is that it's relatable to all walks of life.
Yeah, well, I want to talk about coping mechanisms, because in your book you do talk about this. Tell me a little bit about, you know, as a footy player, you know, in a professional footy player in the spotlight, when you were struggling with bipolar and suicidal ideation, what were your coping mechanisms back then? And then I want to go on to, you know, how has that shifted and changed now?
Yeah, very different to how they are now. You know, in the early years, and again, looking at the culture of rugby league and rugby league when I was playing back then as a kid, and I was lucky enough to be playing, you know, first grade footy in the bush at a young age. So I was 14, 15, 16-year-old before I moved to Sydney, playing against the men, and you cop all sorts of head knocks with that, but not also with the head knocks and so forth with that, is it the party culture associated with it, right, with country footy, and, you know, you play hard and you party hard. For me, it was about the only thing that I could do to silence what was happening in my head was to escape from it. And the only way I could escape was through substance. And that went on for a number of years. And when I was down in Sydney playing, again, you know, to the heights that I reached, you know, I had some not so great ways to escape, and it was through alcohol and drugs. And whilst not proud of that, I've definitely made some changes in that. And 16 years ago, I gave away that lifestyle. So
6 years ago?
16 years ago.
16 years ago, right.
16 years in December, I haven't had a drink.
Amazing.
And for me, what I noticed when I actually got off the drink, because a lot of the negative things that were happening in my life were all associated, there was one thing in common. And whether it was bad form on the field, whether it was arguments at home, whether it was things that were happening that were negative in my life, there was only the only thing that was in common with every single situation was alcohol. Alcohol and drugs, you know.
Okay,
whilst I wanted to be a footy player all my life, more than anything, I wanted to be a good dad. And substance took me away from that.
So I want you to take me back 16 years ago, December 16 years ago, almost. We're nearing that date now. Talk me through that moment that you decided that I'm done. I've had enough. I need to make a change.
Let's go. 11 months before that, right? Because I was sober for 11 months before that, and then I thought I'll be able to control this. I'll just have a couple, and then it was like the car took off exactly from where it left.
Right.
It was like putting a car in a garage with 100,000 clicks on it. You take it out, it doesn't go back to zero. There's still 100,000 clicks there. So I went from trying to manage what I was going through to a 2 week bender. You know, and you know, you're looking at off seasons of footy and so forth like that. And I just got to the point where I was like, I just can't do this anymore. Like I made the decision that it's like I knew that I was going to be locked up or not here anymore if I continued that lifestyle, and it wasn't who I wanted to be. It wasn't who I was raised to be. And it wasn't who I wanted my kids to see. So I, you know, it was about a week before Christmas, actually, 16 years ago, when I rang up mum and dad and I said, I'm not coming home for Christmas if there's any alcohol in the house. Because I don't want to be around it.
How did they take that?
It was you know, that's a story in itself. You know, is that you want your kids to come home for Christmas? Of course you do. And our household was historically the party house. Like it was, we all play guitar, we all sing, we all love a good time. And it was like, you know what? It's more important that you come home, so we won't have anything there. I get home and Dad had been on the drink for a couple of days, you know. So I was like, I want to get back in the car and go home. And at that point, the conversation started with my old man about the challenges that he may be going through with their relationship of alcohol, and he got sober from that point as well.
Oh, wow. That's amazing.
Right. So me and my dad have been sober 16 years together.
Oh, brother, that's deadly. That gives me goosebumps, you know.
It's a great story in itself, just that, you know, because out of all of that, you know, like the little things that I'm proud of, my oldest fellow, when he was in preschool, you know, there was a conversation with kids and they were talking about what their dads drink. Like, this is preschool age kids. What their dads drink, and my boy said my dad doesn't drink beer, he drinks water.
Oh, deadly.
You know, and that's the generational cycles that we can break and change.
It's funny because, you know, I do drink.
Or create.
Yeah, I do drink, but it's funny. I don't generally drink around my children. It's not. I'm not a heavy drinker. And my son actually said to me, I don't know where he picked up this or where it came from. He said, "Mummy, is the reason why you don't drink because is that because you love us and want to care for us and look after us?" And I was like, "Well, I don't know.
How powerful is that? Well, powerful is that conversation that comes out of a kid's mouth, man?"
Right. But it got me thinking, like, you know, I don't not drink around him. I just suppose it just doesn't really happen that often. So he's built this notion up in his head and this understanding around relationships with alcohol. Now, if you've just joined us here at 98.9 FM's Let's Talk program, we are chatting, you're listening to Joe Williams, who has done some incredible work in the space of mental health. He's a proud Wiradjuri Wagalu man, and he was born and raised in Wagga, as he mentioned before, played National Rugby League for South Sydney Rabbitohs, Penrith Panthers, the Bulldogs, and then switched to professional boxing in 2009. Joe's book, The Enemy Within, which was released 2 years ago, it actually got you a mental health prize in 2019 from the UNSW, from the University of New South Wales. Tell me about that and sort of what your aim is or how it is that you used that platform to encourage people to address issues around their mental health.
It was the Australian Mental Health Prize, and I guess it gave me a platform to have a dig at who was in the audience.
Yeah, right.
I was presented the award by Scott Morrison. So I thought, I'm not going to let this opportunity go. So I sort of went in swinging as far as the challenges that are happening in our communities. But the relationship that this is, you know, he's sitting 15 metres from me in the audience, and I'm like, the way we're doing things isn't working. You know, like we've got millions and millions of dollars being spent to try and close the gap, and the gap's not closing, or if it is, it's minimal. So that tells you the way that the people you are funding aren't doing their job, right? Or the ways that we are doing that isn't working.
Yeah.
So I had a bit of a stick at, you know, the fact that there is millions and millions of on millions of dollars being spent on non-Indigenous organisations to go in and tell our kids how to live. And without, you know, looking at community consultation and looking at a ground-up approach, you know, making decisions from Canberra and that's impacting our mob. And people have to realise that we never had suicide in our communities for thousands and thousands of years. Now we've got among the highest in the world.
Well, you did mention before this program that the word suicide cannot be found in any of the dialects across Australia. Is that something that you mentioned before?
Well, it said that in over 500 separate nation groups, 2,500 different dialects of language, there's no meaning for suicide. There's no word that tells you you end your own life by your own hands. You know, and so if there's nothing that tells you, there's nothing that describes it, it tells you it wasn't there.
Yeah.
Like if there's no word to talk about the behaviour of what it was, it tells you it wasn't there. So we got to change the narrative and change the conversation around that. And it came on the back with a conversation with an elder of mine as well, who said, "Joe," and I've been in the space for a lot of years, right? So I talk differently sometimes around the narrative that's spoken. And that special old follower, he said to me, he goes, "You're not mentally ill," and I'll challenge any doctor that says that to you. He said, "You're not mentally ill," and I'm like, what do you mean I'm not? I've been in psych wards, I've been locked up and you know, in mental health institutions and given all these different medications to try and make me well. And he said, "You're not mentally ill, you're spiritually ill."
Ooh.
And for us mob, and again, like, conversations with elders, with Indigenous peoples, First Nation Native peoples around the
world. What does that mean, Joe? Sorry to cut you off there, but not being spiritually well. You know, it's interesting because I did mention to you that just last week I spent the week in Catherine with my boy, you know, and I had some time to really focus on my mental health. And it's interesting because I was lucky to have some time with an incredible elder who actually made me feel so incredibly emotional about, you know, where I was at in my life. And it was that, and I walked away feeling spiritually well. What do you mean when you say that?
So I tell people all the time, and again, that old fella, he said, you're not mentally ill, you're spiritually ill. You can't get well inside four walls. Our people have been on country for thousands of years. You've got to get out in the bush and start doing the work to heal yourself, right? And you can't get well inside four walls. You get well around a fire.
Sure.
Sitting and talking to people and connecting to people and looking out and learning about our old stories. Like, people don't understand. Like, for me, and I'm lucky that I've got a great support network around me now. As far as my partner goes, she can identify when I'm not well. And she can say to me, and I can trust her in when she says it, that, Joe, it's time to get your swag and get out for a couple of days. Right, get out on the land, get out around a fire, and where you've got no television, you've got no phone, you've got no distraction. Get out there and let your head settle down a little bit. We're living in walking between two worlds that we don't quite fit. Like I talk so openly about my identity of who I am. I was a kid who grew up too black to be white and too white to be black. I didn't really fit in either world because I didn't do the cultural practice that I saw on TV. And I wasn't dark as what people saw on TV. So people criticized me for being too light. And then even sometimes within our community, some mob, I felt like I was too, like I wasn't dark enough.
I can definitely relate to that.
And a lot of people do, right? So getting back to what you were talking about, you know, as far as healing the spirit, you got to get out and you got to start to listen to yourself.
Yeah.
What I mean, listen to yourself. Listen to what's going on in your head, right? And the only way that we can slow down and have a look at the things that are going on in our head is when we're mindful in what we do.
So there's this thing called Dadiri.
And all of our old, yeah, there is.
Yes,
right? And I wrote about this. Yeah, of course I have.
Yeah.
I wrote about this. Just recently, and in talking about, you know, Dadiri and the different practices that we have, and let's not forget that these different practices were very present in all of our languages. So no matter who you are as a First Nation people, there would be a language word that describes that as well, right?
Yeah.
So I say to people all the time, like, Go and learn your language of what it means to be present, what it means to be still.
Now, what's the word for your mob?
In mine, it's called Winangara.
Winangara.
Which means to as if we roll our R's at the end, so Winangara.
Winangara.
So to hear, think, and listen in the
amazing.
Present.
So the word, concept, and spiritual practice that is Dadiri.
So it was a wonderful lady who won one of the Elder of the Year awards.
Aunty Miriam Rose.
Aunty Miriam Rose. Yeah.
Yeah.
So she was the one who I guess, or from my reading and learning and understanding, it is the practice that has been very much the awareness of it through, you know, the work of what she does. And I wrote about this during the week, and it's talking about what culture is. I wrote about it in an article that I wrote for The Guardian. Let's have a look at our cultural practices, right? All of our cultural practices were about being present. And if you have a look at the word that I just said, Winangara, is about being present. Thinking and listening in the present, right? Dadiri is all about thinking, listening, and identifying in the present. You know, all of our acts of culture, all of the practices of what culture is, whether it be art, whether it be dance, whether it be song, all of these different things, walking country even, had all the elements of being present.
Yeah,
being present. That's why our mob never had issues with their mind. That's why our mob didn't have issues with their mind, right? It's because they're always present. Now, have a look at when you're not present, you're always projecting what's going to happen in the future, which causes anxiety, and you're always worried about what happened in the past or regretting what happened in the past, which highlights thoughts around depression. You know, so if we think too much about the future, it gives us anxiety. If we worry too much about the past, there's elements of depression.
Well, you can't control it, can you? You know,
And again, that same special elder, it's like, so there's no such thing as the future. And he's right. It's just a made-up word, right? And you see, the only thing we've got is our past. We don't even have the present. I said, what do you mean we don't have the present? He said, you only have a moment of presence and then it becomes the past.
Yeah, right.
So everything that we do, everything that we've learnt, everything that we've been conditioned by has happened in our past. Now, we're lucky as First Nation people is that our past dates back thousands and thousands and thousands of years. So the answers to healing our future, if you want to call it that, is by looking at our past. Because if we had 100,000 years plus of no suicides, then what we did worked.
Yeah.
We've got the highest suicide rates in the world now. What we're doing now is not working.
Let's talk about those suicide rates just for a second. And if you are listening, I'm chatting with Joe Williams, who is a former rugby league player and boxer, a professional rugby league and boxer. He wrote the book The Enemy Within, which speaks about his experience living with suicidal ideation and bipolar. And also we've spoken about the work that he's done in the mental health space since he's come out and written that book, and even before then, his journey of growth and finding culture and reconnecting. If any of this has caused or has brought anything up for you, I really encourage you to get in contact with Lifeline on 131114. That's 131114. Chat to them. There's also 1-800-RESPECT, 1-800-737-732, or Men's Helpline 1-300-789-9878. But I do encourage you to go to your local Aboriginal medical service where you can get that culturally safe care from GPs, nurses, Aboriginal health workers and so forth. We've been chatting about Movember. You can donate to the Movember page by jumping on Movember and looking for Team Bima, B-I-M-A, even if it's $5, but it's bringing awareness to prostate and testicular cancer and also suicide. Speaking of rates, sadly, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are unbelievably substantially higher than those that are non-Indigenous at the moment. There has been a rise in suicide rates, a considerable rise, particularly from 2001, right up to now, 2021. And you can have a look at that information at the Australian Institute of Health and Welfare. But basically, Joe, it's fluctuated in Indigenous males. So there was a low of 25.1 deaths per 100,000 in 2008. And then now, in 2020, 42.9 suicides per 100,000 population. You know, that's an incredible increase, Joe. What do you think needs to happen for us to address those unbelievable rates?
So I think, particularly with our mob, like it's the world's getting faster, and we're getting more disconnected.
Connection,
as people, right?
That word keeps coming up this month. Connection, connection to culture, connection to yourself, connection to presence.
Let's have a look at what that is. You know, like, and it's just connection to people. So it's not just connection to culture. It's not just connection to yourself. It's connection to everything. It's connection to people. It's connection to our inner thoughts. Like it's connection to many things. You know, what we do know, and I relate a lot back to you know, a brilliant, brilliant book that I read called Lost Connections by a guy called Johann Hari. And he talks about how the unexpected causes of depression and anxiety around the lack of connection. Because, you know, think about us, right? And every time that I was, every word that I read in that book, I kept thinking about our mom, is that we were people who were always communal. We were always together and with each other. But now we're not. You know, now we're living in this world again, as I said, that doesn't quite fit. So looking at what we did, we always did things together. We always fed and looked after each other. First Nation peoples around the world, Indigenous peoples around the world, were a collectivist people, which was always about looking after each other.
Mm.
Right now, we are the most disconnected that we've ever been in the history of humankind, and that's why we're so sick.
And you know, it's interesting because we survived 65,000 years. You know, like it's not, it was sustainable, it worked. But you know, I think that it's important to note that we still exist, we're still here, and there's still opportunity for mob. You know, and if you are listening and you are struggling, I've been in really difficult times myself where I felt like I've not wanted to be here. But that thing that you speak about, Joe, that word connection, I think was very much central to my healing. And it still is. And that's the other thing. It's not ever, it takes work. This takes work. You need to look after your mental health.
You don't just click your fingers, man.
Absolutely.
You don't just click your fingers and wake up and say, I'm fixed.
And even if there is, it appears that everything's fine and dandy, you know, always be aware and take that time to just check in on your mental health, because when things happen, you know, for me it was the loss of my father and then the breakdown of my relationship with my kid's father, that really just, it just came. I mean, some might say you could have expected it, but for me, I just, it hit me hard, you know, losing my dad. And I fell apart and I wasn't expecting it, because, you know, I had always defined myself by looking after people and being a carer and having family and, you know, all those things. And then all of a sudden I could no longer do that stuff. I literally was debilitated, like it was debilitating. And so when that hit, I wasn't prepared. I'll be honest, I wasn't prepared. I wasn't prepared for the emotions and for being able to process that stuff. So that's why I always say preventative is better than cure, right? Because if you have those mechanisms in place and you have those healthy relationships, identifying healthy relationships and weeding out those ones that are toxic, then you begin to build a kind of like an armor in a sense, or a situation where you can be safe. You know, and when these things do come up, you can deal with them accordingly. Joe, you've done amazing things in this space. I think that you're an absolutely powerful speaker. Are there any thoughts that you, well, actually, I do have a question. Raising a strong Indigenous boy, I took my boy up to the Northern Territory last week. It was an opportunity for me to connect with him and have that time. And I actually said to him, mate, if you see me pick up my phone, then you can pick up your iPad. And it was a way for me to be able to go, I need to be present here with my boy and enjoy where we are and have that time with him. You know, what would you say to, say, someone like myself who's raising a young Indigenous boy about some of the fundamentals of making sure I'm instilling the right things in him?
I think, you know, a lot of the work that I do is also around attachment, secure attachment, and you know, looking at how we raise our young people. You know, we are all on different paths, yet very similar paths, where it comes to, we've all built coping mechanisms to survive and do live the best way we know how to at the moment. It's about trying to unwire that and unwire those patterns and look at different things. And again, that takes a lot of work and continuous work as well. But it's also around what we do and how we behave and model, not just our physical behaviors, but also our emotions.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when we react to things, let's be a little bit more conscious of how we react and why we react. I always say, don't look at what, look at why. Don't look at what's going on or what the behavior is. Let's look at why it's going on. But for me, encouraging young fellas and speaking to the question of a young boy, encourage young fellas to talk about their emotions.
Mm. We actually stopped on our way out, past Catherine, and there was a blue tree there, and I actually pulled over because I recognised the blue tree. There's often blue trees that are painted literally with blue, and it's basically suicide awareness. And I jumped down and I took a photo of it, and he said, "Mummy, what's that?" And I said, "That's a symbol for suicide, and it's about recognizing suicide and so on." And he said, "You know, what's suicide?" And I explained it to him, and I explained, you know, that his own cousin had taken, or sorry, my cousin rather had taken his life a couple of years ago, and my other cousin went in 96. I lost him, and also friends and family. You know, and it got him thinking and talking. And I said, mate, you know, you never have no one to talk to. There's always someone to talk to. And that's what I implore people to do if they're listening, encourage people to do if they're listening, is to speak to someone, to try that connecting, to try and connect and have that check-in, you know.
Emotions are keys with this. Like, you know, I've got three boys and two girls, right? And I'm part of a book. I'm part of a book called Dear Son, which was a collaboration with a heap of different fathers put together by Thomas Mayer.
Oh, yes. I spoke about this on Let's Talk a couple of months ago. Yes, Dear Son.
So that's a brilliant way of fathers talking to their sons, right? And this opened a conversation with my 17-year-old boy. And it goes back further than that, right? Even at young fellas, I say let's talk and encourage emotions, right? Because too many times we say, "Stop crying, that didn't hurt."
Yeah,
that's not, you know, that doesn't hurt you. Or we don't know why kids are showing signs of emotions, yet we try and silence it, and then we blow up when at 16, 17-year-old, they're trying to hide their emotions in a bottle.
Or locking themselves in the room.
For the first 3 and 4 years of their life, all we've done is say, "Shut up, don't cry."
Yeah, right.
Right. What we need to do is be consciously aware of the words that we talk to when we're talking to our kids.
And I love what you said before about example as well, because...
My little 7-year-old boy, right, he's the most emotional kid in the entire world.
Is my 7-year-old
right?
boy.
and for those who follow me on Instagram will know who I'm talking about when I talk about Aaron, right? but it's not about saying, "Don't cry." What I say to him is say, mate, tell me what you're upset about.
Mm.
Tell me how it's making you feel.
Mm.
And then I can then, like, we are expecting kids to have the same management strategies of emotions as we do as adults, yet we're the ones who are screaming, ranting, and raving.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, it's modelling emotional regulation to our kids, and that plays out so much into early adulthood.
And it's looking inward rather than looking outward as well. You know, that thing of being like focusing on the now and the present and looking inward at yourself. What can you do to change the situation? Joe, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, but I want to know, where can people find you if they want to reach out, or if they want to be part of a program you're running, or if they want to read your book? You can grab his book, The Enemy Within, online.
My book, Defying the Enemy Within, let's make sure it's about silencing that enemy that we've all got in our own head. So Defying the Enemy Within, can just be, we can get a hold of me or or the book or any sort of merch or anything like that on our website, which is www.joewilliams.com.au. Nice and easy one. Been an Xbox and footy player, my head's a little bit mashed around, so I'm going to make it easy. And all my social media handles on Twitter and Instagram, at @JoeWilliams_TEW for the enemy within, @JoeWilliams_TEW. And on Facebook, it's The Enemy Within Suicide Prevention, Trauma Recovery and Wellness Education.
Joe, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on. I really appreciate your openness and your powerful words today here on Let's Talk.
If there's anything, I often get asked if there's one bit of advice, what could you give people?
Yeah.
The bit of advice, particularly our mob, is to learn our old stories, right? Because what a lot of people don't know is them old dreaming stories have got lessons in them. Them old stories have got values in them. Them old stories have got values of love, care, respect, humility, compassion, sharing, looking after each other, right? That's why our old people were so well. They aren't just stories for pretty little picture books.
Oh.
Those are stories that kept our people alive and thriving in our community. So if you are listening, go out and learn the story of where you are from and try and implement it into your life.
That's a brilliant ending, because last week I went out to meet an amazing 93-year-old elder who shared amazing stories for a project I'm doing with ABC, creation stories essentially of the sky, of water, of the land, and it absolutely was medicine for my soul. Thank you so much.
I bet you all of those stories had lessons and values in them.
100%. 100%.
That's the way we're going to live, mate.
Yeah.
Going back and listening and learning to those stories.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Joe. I really appreciate having you on Let's Talk today.
Always a pleasure. And I've been connecting with you guys for a lot of years, since the very early days when that special old man, Uncle Tiger Bales, used to interview me when I was a young kid coming through in the footy, and that's how I've been connected to you guys for a lot of years. So thank you for the work that you do, and always a pleasure to connect.
And that was Joe Williams, a proud Wiradjuri and Wolgloo man who wrote the book Defying the Enemy Within. If you want to catch any of Joe's stuff, you can go on to joewilliams.com.au and check out some of the motivational speaking he does. He's got some merchandise in there. There's some information about suicide prevention. And this month we are speaking suicide prevention and bringing testicular and prostate cancer to the forefront so that we can speak about these things and take care of our health. If any of this stuff has brought anything up for you, you can call Lifeline on 131114. And if you've enjoyed this program, you can tune in again tonight for the repeat at 7 p.m. or you can grab and upload the podcast a little bit later on in the day on all your major platforms or at 989fm.com.au. It's been an absolute pleasure having you here. I'm Karina Hogan, and this is Let's Talk on 989FM.